Welcome back to Customers Who Click, the e-commerce podcast for D2C brands. In each episode, we will look to answer one important question. What is the one thing brands should be doing right now to get customers clicking? Each guest will take us through actionable insights and real-life examples from brands excelling in the art of customer attraction. So whether you're looking to enhance your conversion rates, boost average order values, or extend customer lifetime value, this is the podcast for you. Visit customerswhoclick.com for all our past episodes and to connect with us. Now dive into the world of D2C e-commerce with us and unravel the secrets to keeping those customers clicking.
Hello and welcome back to Customers Who Click. As you can probably tell for those eagle-eyed amongst you, I'm not Will. My name is Nathan. I'm co-founder of Quickfire Digital, a Shopify Plus agency based in the UK. I'm delighted to be here as the host of, can you believe it, the 200th episode of Customers Who Click podcast. Now, Will's a very good friend of mine, and I've been getting to know him more and more over the last 12 to 18 months. I think what he's doing with the podcast, but also in the CRO space, is absolutely phenomenal. And so I was delighted when Will asked me if I would be the guest host of today, our 200th episode. Will, it's an absolute pleasure to turn this around and for me to interview you today. And so without further ado, let's get started. Will, why Customers Who Click? And also, why CRO?
Hi, Nathan. Well, firstly, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and do this with me. It means a lot to me. And yeah, so Customers Who Click, I guess it came about probably from the very start of my career, but I won't go all the way that far. I'll just get to the point, which was I worked for two companies back to back, and I had the same issue at both these companies. We got given a large marketing budget and told, go run your ads, acquire customers, grow these companies. And then it kind of felt like the rest of the company went off and did their own thing, right? The product guys had their roadmap. Developers obviously worked on that. The guys at the top were all thinking investment and big plans. And it was just very obvious quite quickly that the advertising side was working quite well. We were getting good click-through rates, good responses there in pretty much everything we did on partnerships and all that. But we were struggling to convert people and we were struggling to retain people. And so I started to gather feedback. Right, so initially I set some email surveys up in the automation. 2 weeks after someone had signed up or dropped their email in, why haven't you purchased yet? Why haven't you signed up? And started to take all this feedback, spoke to some customers as well, got them on the phone, and just worked out that people sometimes didn't understand what these products did. They didn't get how to use them, didn't see the point. And I was taking all this feedback back to the product teams, developers, and saying, look, we need to scrap doing our inbuilt referral program and our homemade email system, right? No one needs to be doing this. We need to be working on the sign-up flows, the purchase flows, the actual experience that people are having here so that we can actually grow this company so that there's customers to use these tools further down the line that you want to build. So this happened literally almost exactly the same situation, two companies in a row, right? Funded startups, loads of money, but you know, the expectation was that you just run some ads and you grow it. And I'm sure you're aware it doesn't work like that.
If only.
Yeah. And I suppose that's, I don't think I realized it at the time, but that was CRO. I was doing CRO, I was A-B testing landing pages and things. And that's kind of what got me into it. And I ended up moving into a maternity cover contract role for a company called Gamesys, which is quite a big gambling company in the UK. They own Virgin Games, Heart Bingo, Monopoly Casino, stuff like that. So I was head of conversion there for about 15 months. Yeah, it was about 15 months. Then moved into this international incubator sort of role, which is how it was pitched to me. It didn't quite work out like that. I remember having a conversation with her boss and she said, look, to be honest, the marketing side of this probably isn't going to kick off for about 12 months. So do you want to go? And yeah, they handed me a load of cash. And I was like, yeah, cool. I'll take that. I'd always wanted to do, in fact, key little thing in the story, actually, I was in a meeting with HR. They gave me that offer and said, you can go away, think about this. Give us a decision by the end of the week. This is on a Monday, I think. I messaged my best mate on the way to the tube station and he got back to me almost immediately and said, you'd always wanted to go and do your own thing. Take the money and go. So it was mind made up just straight away. I was like, cool, I'm going to do this. The rest of the plan was basically rent out my flat, go traveling, go live somewhere cheap, essentially, make the money last, and then COVID hit and kind of ruined all that plan.
Travel was restricted.
Yeah. But yeah, that's when Well, that's when Monkey Blocks was born, which was the original company name.
Monkey Blocks? Why Monkey Blocks?
Monkey Blocks, I have no idea. It came out of, it came from the pub, to be honest.
Okay.
Having a few drinks. A couple of years before, I've had this domain for a little while. I quite like the name Monkey Blocks. Building blocks, putting stuff together, tinkering with things. And started the agency or consulting back then. And then I launched Customers Who Click in the podcast, April 2020. And then a few months after that, I decided it didn't make sense having a separate agency name. So left Linkham together, put everything under Customers Who Click. And 4 years later, here we are.
Do you think you would have got to 200 episodes had the podcast been called Monkey Blocks? No. I was going to say, I think the decision to rebrand the company as to Customers Who Click, I think was probably one of the best.
So the podcast started as Customers Who Click. Yeah. It was about probably less than 6 months into that. I was like, why am I running different social media accounts, different websites? Why am I updating Monkey Blocks with content and customerswhoclick.com with the podcast? It doesn't make any sense. So merged them together. Obviously, Customers Who Click for a CRO agency is, I think, a pretty great name.
Yeah, I do.
Definitely better than Monkey Blocks. So, that's bad I made that decision.
I'm interested in terms of the podcast. I mean, I see a lot of people starting podcasts, but they never see it through. They maybe get 6 episodes in, 12 episodes in, 24 episodes in, etc., and then it stops. So, and we were guilty of that as well. So I'm curious to your side, like, before we get into that bit, why did you start a podcast in the first place?
I think I wanted to do something different, something to stand out. Now, I know back in 2020, right? So podcasts were more of a thing, right? You definitely got more of them and fewer that were kind of backed by big brands. People just starting their own things up. But there weren't too many in the marketing space, particularly for e-com at the time. And everything else was kind of, I didn't just want to write blogs. I didn't know enough about SEO and distribution there. So I didn't want to do that. LinkedIn was very different, I think. It was a bit, there was far less value on there. But now you see so many amazing posts where people just give away how to run ad campaigns and stuff like that. And it's fantastic, you know, how to set up landing pages and everything you need. Back then, you got a lot more of that. I bumped into someone while getting onto the train. He caught my coffee, so I gave him a job on the spot. It's just like, what is this rubbish?
Yeah,
I'm sure people listening remember that sort of post. But it was, there was just so much rubbish there and I didn't want to do that. So, I was like, well, let's get on a podcast. And also, obviously, the other side of it was made the decision immediately to make it a guest-based podcast because then I'm guaranteeing myself 52 conversations a year with interesting people in the space, experts in every area of e-commerce, marketing, and other areas of business. So, from that point of view as well, it built up the networking side for me as well.
I think that approach is really refreshing because actually when I was doing some research before coming on today and I looked from episode 1 to episode 199 or whatever, what I've seen is that the quality of content has never been sacrificed. Right? It's always been good quality content and let's hope episode 200 lives up to that, but the content has always been top notch. And I guess my question to you is almost selfishly and for those listening, what are the keys to the success or the kind of things that you think actually looking back on reflection, these have been big wins for the podcast and actually these have been some learnings that I've taken?
Yeah, sure. So one thing that I wish I'd done differently right at the start was, especially for those first few episodes, I wish I'd done a test recording and realized how bad the audio was in the room that I was in. It was in this little office in the middle of nowhere in Poland where I was staying just before COVID hit. And it echoed. And I didn't have the best quality microphone. So I listen back to those episodes every now and again and I'm just like, oh, I wish I'd just thought about that before and done a test recording and just found somewhere else to do it. But, it is what it is. Episode 1 with Will Stewart Jones is still the most listened to episode. It gets a lot of listens every month and actual listens, not downloads. Because obviously, if someone comes across the podcast and hits subscribe, there's a chance they'll just download. Spotify sometimes just downloads every episode. So obviously, you start building those numbers up, but it is the most listened to episode some months. But in terms of what the actual question was, which was a big win.
It's around like the key wins. I think for those listening, they'll probably look at yourself and go, this is someone that's actually made podcasting a success, which is rare. For all the one or two you see successful, you can find 200 that haven't made it successful. So what I want to get out of you is, what are those ingredients that's made it the success it is today?
Yeah. So I think the stat I got told when I was kicking it off was, I don't remember the exact stat, but huge number of podcasts don't get past three episodes.
Three? I'm sticking around, but three?
I can do three in a day. It's like, and that's not bragging because I've done it for so long. Literally, three 45-minute episodes in a day isn't even half a day's work. So, I mean, it obviously helped that I launched the podcast with four episodes, which meant I was immediately fast.
An overnight success, quite literally.
I think a couple of things that have helped have been having a structure to the episodes. So having questions that I provide every guest, and it's the same style of questions. It might be phrased a little bit differently to take into account what their expertise is, but the general idea of the episode has been the same. Now the format is, what is the one thing a brand should be doing to get customers clicking? And then as we discuss it, it's how do brands do it, some examples of brands doing it well, and just anything that I pick up on and want to talk about further in there. And that's pretty much been the big thing throughout the entire podcast. What is one big thing that you think is worth talking about? And so that's obviously made it easier for the guests.
Yeah.
And then I think the other part probably has just been getting guests on and knowing that I've got to get guests on, right? It's never crossed my mind to say, oh, well, I haven't got a guest in 2 weeks' time booked, so I'll just do a solo episode and I'll fill that gap. I've gone out and found someone, right? And I think Adam Pearce was one, actually, who I was short on a guest, and I just messaged him and said, do you want to come on? You've got loads to talk about. I hadn't had him on before, so he jumped on. I think we might have recorded the next day after I invited him. Really quick. So it's great having people who will jump on for that. But yeah, I think probably the two things that I think have made it most successful are having that established format, the consistent format that people know they're going to get from the episode, and having a guest on it every time as well, every week.
I think one thing I've always admired about you was that you've never been afraid to share the keys to the success. And I think that's important, right? Some people will stay quite guarded with that thing because they don't possibly want someone else creating a podcast, but actually to catch up to number 200, that's a heck of a lot of podcasts you got to do, right?
Yeah.
So actually you're in a kind of league of your own, if you like, and therefore I'm going to pry a little bit deeper if you don't mind. And I just want to know, like, in terms of the technology stack, I think one of the concerns for people starting a podcast would just be like, where do they start? Like, what's the tech behind it? How do they get that? And is it actually that accessible? And what I've come to learn is actually perhaps it is. With the right technology, it doesn't have to be massively expensive to create a podcast. So would you mind just sharing kind of the tech behind it, just so people can start to understand it and perhaps reduce that barrier to entry?
Yeah, sure. So it's been interesting. And I'm already, as you were talking, I'm already overthinking my answer to this because I'm in CRO. I like testing. And I know that I haven't tested this stuff properly. I started off with a microphone that was about 30 quid. Might not have even been that. It's about 20 quid. Tiny little thing. You can put it in your bag and carry it around. The quality wasn't great. But also, like I said, we had that office that I started in, which was echoey. So that might have been all right. But honestly, you could probably use Apple AirPods or something, or Apple headphones if you wanted to start off, right? They are kind of good enough. Now, I've got a Shure M7, I think it is, and I love it. And I actually get a lot of compliments about this now, but it's about, I think it's about £220. So I don't know, $280, maybe close to $300. So I've invested in it, but I think the quality is much, much better. I've got a light which sits behind my webcam, like a ring light, which again, I think is about 40 quid. You can spend a couple of hundred on those and they are a lot better, but we don't use a huge amount of video for the podcast really. So it's too important. Other than that, I use Riverside to record, which I think is fantastic. The quality is much better than Zoom, which is what I started with. and the functionality you get after the recording is really good as well. So being able to edit the episodes, cut clips out of it, it transcribes the episode as well. So I can put that transcription into ChatGPT, and ChatGPT then gives me all the key insights, key learnings, timestamps, quotes, all that sort of stuff. So that speeds up all the post-production stuff for the team as well. I think that's it, apart from an editor who then does the actual editing. Yeah, I think it's Riverside, ChatGPT, and a microphone is basically all you need.
I think that's going to be quite a surprise for many people listening that think, actually, there's a lot of tech and a lot of cost into it. And what I love is that you kind of, sometimes we talk about good is good enough, right? And you've said, actually, I'll start here and then I'll evolve and I'll scale it. And now episode 200, who knows, you might be able to justify a new ring light as a celebratory thing or a new something. But actually, it's been lovely to see as the content and the episodes have progressed, so has the technology and everything around it. Christian, do you think you'll go into doing it face-to-face? Because you see more podcasts now that turn into video and they use more video and they almost are having a conversation here and there rather than remotely. Do you think you'll ever go down that route, or will it always be remote?
Something to think about. You need a dedicated space for it. I know Nick Dunn does his, the guys at Charles, and they've got the space for it because it's in their office. Yeah. Right. And actually, I was going to add on the tech side, that's where I think the cost does go up quite a lot, because you do need separate microphones. You need to make sure microphones aren't picking up each other's voices. You do have to have much better lighting, because it is, you know, a lot of the point of doing it in person is for the video as well. Yeah. So that's where your cost is going to go up a bit. I'm open to it. I've thought about it a lot. A lot of our guests are not UK based, so that means you can't do that. But you know, I can always do the face-to-face for the ones who are. Yeah, I've thought about it. And actually, there was a while back, I think it was probably around between episodes 50 and 100, I was thinking about whether or not a panel format would work.
Okay.
But in person, because I think that would work a bit better in person than online, because you get a little less interruption.
Interesting. Okay. Question, let's take ourselves forward to episode 300. You've had some unbelievable guests up to 200. But my question to you is, if you could choose anyone for episode 300, who do you think would be a fantastic guest for the Customers Who Click podcast?
300. It's got to be someone from a brand. Now, the intention for this year is to be a bit more brand focused and get more brands on. And I've recorded a few already and I've got a bunch lined up. Episode 300, probably going to be like one of the leading guys at Games Workshop. For me, the nerdy side of me coming out, I used to be into Warhammer massively when I was young, like addicted to it, I would say. But they've created such an incredible business around like a hobby and a community there. There's so much going on that Games Workshop don't even know about. They're not even involved in, but it's growing their business because they put the effort in early. The stores, you could go into a store and a staff member would play a game with you to show you how it works. They would teach you how to paint. They would talk you through like the different armies and what you could do, the different books and stuff. So they really had a customer first approach with it. And another thing was, I remember doing this as well, like if you lost a piece or broke a piece when you were trying to build your models, you could go in store, speak to them about it, and they would order you a new one to the store, like any little piece. And if that piece was on a larger frame of pieces, you'd get the whole thing. They'd just say, we're just going to fix this for you. We'll send you the whole piece. So stuff like that, they were just such a customer-centric business. And I think that's why they've had incredible growth over the last few years. I mean, whether they get to a $1 billion business, I don't know. But they're doing incredibly well. And now they're working with Amazon on TV and movie content. So maybe that will lift them. So I think the guys who was involved in kind of building that business in the early days and growing that and setting those kind of values in place, I think that'd be amazing.
That would be a hell of a get. Well, I look forward to episode 300. Here's hoping. Let's manifest it. Very good. So I guess we've talked a lot about the positives around podcasting, and I'm going to come to some of the challenges shortly. But one other piece I just had was around the guest outreach. Okay, because that I see is the other challenge when you're running a podcast is I've always been in admiration for how you've managed to get good quality guests time and time again. And I guess a lot of that comes from the method of outreach. How do you go about getting these fantastic brands and names to come on the podcast? And I get there's going to be this kind of snowball effect of when you've done 150, you've suddenly got some social proof or credibility and it's going to get easier. But take yourself back to episode 1 to 10. Like, what did you have to offer them for them to say yes? Or was it literally just goodwill?
I think I got a bit lucky with a few of them. The first couple of guests, like Parry from Frazee in episode two or three. I don't think I'd met him. I don't think I'd actually met or spoke to him, but I think we were connected on LinkedIn and I had worked with Frazee in my previous company. So I think I just used that angle. And I said, I used to do some work with Frazee when I was back at Gamesys. I'm launching this podcast and I'd love to talk about AI in email and copywriting. So I just kind of pitched it to him like that. And he said, yes. And yeah, I think the first few were people from my network, people who I had some sort of connection with and had some way of saying either we've met before or I've worked with you guys or something like that. And I just pushed hard to get as many booked in as I could early on, because I had that feeling that in the early days, if I'd hit a week where I didn't have the podcast ready for the following week, that's when I might have given up. And I might have said, look, this is too much work. And I probably would have been thinking I'm not getting anything back for it. Because when you're 4 or 5 episodes into a podcast, you're not going to get anything back from it, right? This takes time. So yeah, I think, to answer your question, like going out to my network initially for those people and then referencing people. So I remember a lot of my outreach early on was I've spoken to people from Pizza Hut and Jellyfish and what else did I name drop? Virgin Pure used for a bit. So I've dropped the Virgin brand in there and that got me more people. Now I did try brands earlier on and I didn't get much response. And I think part of the reason for that was either a lot of people just weren't interested. I mean, I still get either no response or no thanks from a lot of people. But I do wonder if they thought they were just going to get pitched. And that I was trying to get them onto an intro call about the podcast. And maybe I'd do 5 minutes of quickly, here's the podcast, this is what it's about, do you want to do it? They say yes. And then suddenly it's, oh yeah, well, why don't I tell you about our services while we've got 10 more minutes? And I've never done that. Well, maybe once because he asked what we do, but I've never pitched without being asked. But yeah, I think that held it back on the brand side for a bit. I had one or two reach out through agencies, which is why we had them on. And to be honest, I probably left it a little bit too late to start reaching out again. I probably could have started reaching out last year to brands again, but I started again January 2024. And just all my LinkedIn outreach for 2024 has been podcast, right? It's something like, I'm Will, I'm the host of the Customers Who Click podcast, 197 episodes, 250,000 downloads. These brands, like name drop 3 or 4 brands, would love to have you on and chat about your experience. If you're interested, let me know and I'll share some more information. Straight to the point, it has a really good connection rate, really good acceptance rate for that. And yeah, I've got some decent brands lined up. So I'm quite excited about that. I don't really want to name drop them because they're not recorded yet.
We will hold on name dropping them and let's just leave that as a little teaser to tune into episode 201-20. I want to just divert a little bit. Well, we talked all very positively about the good side, but I want to talk about the darker side of podcasting, if you don't mind. Like that fear of rejection at the initial outreach through to anxiety building up before you do the podcast to the fear of failure of, are you going to ask the right questions? Are you going to mess up, etc.? And I guess that paralysis of what if I get it wrong, I think would hold a lot of people back from doing podcasts. So I want to ask you this. Do you experience those emotions? Do you get that anxiety? Do you get that fear? Or have you managed to work through that and now you're in such a routine you don't think about it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think I'm at that stage where I've done enough episodes that I'm pretty confident I can contribute to anything. Every now and again, a topic does turn up that I'm like, I'm absolutely not at all an expert in this. So you are going to be leading this and I'll ask questions, right? I've got no problem. And maybe this is what holds some people back, right? I've got no problem asking questions about stuff I don't know and I don't understand. So I will ask those questions on the podcast. Whereas I get that some people want to come across as the general marketing expert. That's why you've got the podcast. You should know this stuff. And I'm kind of thinking, well, if I don't know this stuff, and the whole point of the podcast is that we're talking about new things and different ways of marketing, there's a very good chance the audience doesn't know about it either. So I'm doing them a favor there by actually asking that question and not kind of pretending and hoping that I don't get caught out. And early on, there was definitely a bit of, what am I doing? Like, what? I've got my core four or five questions for the podcast, but how good am I going to be at the conversation in between, like following up questions and diving into things? Or am I going to be in my kind of like paralyzed by the structure and like I've got to ask this question next, so how do I come back to that? Or something I've mentioned to you before, I got diagnosed with ADHD 6 months ago, and apparently a symptom of ADHD or a trait of people is you don't like to let things go. So if you've got something you want to go and back, let's say we were talking about Quickfire and Shopify Plus, if you made a point that I found interesting, I wanted to ask a question on, but you kept talking for another minute, it gets really frustrating for me because I'm like, I want to ask about that and I don't want to, I think it's really important. So I don't want to jump back 2 minutes because it seems odd, but at the same time, I really want to ask about that. And so I think that there was a bit of that going on at first where I was like, do I ask these questions? Do I stick to the structure? How rigid do I be? And I think I can't remember the first couple of episodes for it, but I think I quite quickly got through that, started to ask questions. And then, do you know what? As soon as the feedback starts coming in and you get people specifically calling out stuff like that and saying, you're really good at asking follow-up questions, that's when it becomes so much easier. And you're like, okay, people think I'm good at this, right? So if the people listening think I'm good, then I must be good. So stop worrying about it and just ask whatever questions I want. Continue the conversation how I want to.
I've got a really interesting thought around the diagnosis around the ADHD, and I get it's a little bit off the topic of podcasting, etc. But I'm just, today, well, I want this to be a celebration of you, personally. I think you and what you've done in your journey, and I loved hearing about how you got here and why the podcast started. And I promise I'll come back to the podcast for those listening. But I just want to touch on this piece around ADHD because, again, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that have been diagnosed, have not been diagnosed, want to know, don't want to know, etc. What was the tipping point that made you decide that you wanted to find out and have it a bit more official?
I remember it was last year, probably August. Yeah, do you know what? Last year, I went to Marbella with my sales agency. We did a trip out there to record some video content, do some sales training and stuff, and have a little bit of a holiday. And I got back from that, and my work rate fell through the floor. And I really struggled to get back into things. And I was trying to reflect on it, right? I was looking at like, is it my work environment? Am I bored at sitting behind a desk? Has a week in the sun, I think it was about 10 days in the sun, meant that I can't get back into the flow of things. So I started working downstairs a bit more with the dog. I've tried every possible productivity plan and I've watched so many videos on it and nothing really worked. So I think I might have spoken to someone and they'd mentioned it and I thought, oh, that had crossed my mind before as well, actually. So maybe I'll have another look into this. And I think I did my GP's assessment thing and that came back as, yes, it's likely. So you need to be referred to do it properly. And as that was like 2 years away, I just said, no, I'm going to do it privately. And I paid for it and got it done. And it was all very quick and very good. But I think it was just, I felt for quite a while that my brain was just constantly buzzing, right? It was really difficult to focus on things because I'd be trying to write a LinkedIn post, for example. Or no, actually a better example would be I'd be doing some research for a client and I'd get into a heat map or something and I'd notice something. And then I'd think, oh, I wonder if this is the same for this other client. And I'd have a look there. And then something else would pop up and I'd be like, oh, now I'll look into Klaviyo because is it related to out of stock emails or something. And I just found myself bouncing around so many different things and struggling to focus. So yeah, I think it's probably a combination of things. And to be honest, it probably was a conversation with someone who mentioned it. And I said, oh yeah, maybe I'll look into that again and see what they say.
That's the trigger. And I guess the kind of question as we build back up is really just around knowing that you now have it. Has that felt like a bit of a weight off your shoulders, or at least understanding now you can do something about it, right? And you can begin to understand and have the more emotional intelligence to realize, oh, that's just my brain doing that, and that's because of this, etc. So how has that helped? How has the diagnosis gone on to improve your quality of life?
Yeah, I think now understanding it a bit, understanding it, how it affects my brain and how I do things, has made things a lot easier. Because you watch these YouTube videos that I've got hundreds of thousands of views and likes, and so you're like, well, okay, this guy must know what he's talking about with productivity. And the one that I've thought about a lot, and it's a big ADHD one actually, is eat the frog. Yeah, which is where you do the hardest job first, right? You try and do your toughest piece of work first. Doesn't work for me, right? It's the worst thing I can do. It leads to an awful day. What I need to do is build momentum. So I start every day with LinkedIn engagement, my LinkedIn post, and then LinkedIn outreach. It's pretty much my first hour and a half out 2 hours of the day until about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And that gets me going, right? Because it's quite a repeatable action that, apart from the commenting, doesn't require too much thought, right? I've just got to get it done. So once I've been doing that for a bit, I'm in motion, right? I've got momentum, and then I can start moving into other things. But I just found that if I sat there and I was like, right, I need to write SOPs or something, it was just never going to happen.
I'm interested in that kind of warm-up where you kind of, rather than just going 9 o'clock starts or 8:30 or whenever people start, you just go straight in full throttle. You're kind of just building up to then be like, actually, I'm now ready to play the match. And if you think in other walks of life, that's perfectly logical. But I don't know if necessarily we do that in work. That's interesting. Kind of make it a little bit more lighthearted, I guess. We went pretty deep there, apologies. I'm just keen to know, like, some of the mistakes that you've made and some of the bloopers or gaffes where you think, oh, crumbs, like, you couldn't write it, this has happened, etc. Can you think back to over these 200 episodes, is there anything where you think, this is not the way I should have done it, or I've really dropped the ball here?
Fortunately, I've not had any disasters, I don't think.
Until we realize this isn't actually recording. And, yeah, that's it.
Well, yeah. So on that topic, I have never failed to record an episode. I'm quite good like that. When I have a process and I get into a habit of a process, I'm good at following it. So I know that I always say to that person, we'll have a quick catch up at the start. And I say, are you ready? I'll hit record, do the intro, and then we'll go. So I kind of prime it all. And then Zoom says, we are now recording. Riverside says, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Right. So you get that visual cue as well. So fortunately, I've never had that issue. However, I was a guest on a podcast and she did forget, which was a bit frustrating. And I came back and did it again. Big problems. I did accidentally delete an episode before it went live and frantically had to try and work out where that was and how I could get it back. And I found it. Where was it? I don't think Zoom had it. I think I'd uploaded it. Yeah, I think I'd uploaded it to Otter AI. And I was able to export it from Otter AI again. And that's what saved me, because that would have been a disaster. I think in terms of, yeah, that's probably the worst thing, the biggest mistake I've made. The only other downsides have been maybe not vetting a few guests enough and having to write off a few episodes.
Okay, so you've done the podcast and you thought, this is not the quality that I visage, or the style or the content, and therefore we're just simply not going to publish it. How did you address that with the guest that was on the podcast?
To be honest, I didn't. So I finished the episodes. No, I don't cut it off. I don't say, you know what, this isn't good enough, I think we should leave it here. I finished the episodes and I think I've always just left it as, I'll get back to you when it's ready to go live. And maybe I could handle it a bit better, and maybe later on I should have followed up and said, do you know what, we've reviewed it and I don't feel like it's the quality. But I don't know if anyone benefits from that.
I mean, we'll see, won't we? Episode 200, does it go, does it not go? See, fingers crossed. I'm looking back now going, crumbs, have I ever done a recording and it's never been published? I've just not been told.
Yeah. I mean, there was, so one, yeah, won't go into too much detail, but.
I was going to say, we almost had you there. Go on.
Well, one person did not know the stuff at their topic. The topic that their business was specializing in couldn't answer some basic questions about it. And that was probably the more annoying one. And then I've had two where I think we were done in about 15, 20 minutes. And I was like, the episodes are, I think the lowest, shortest episode at the time was probably just over 30 minutes. So if it's 15 to 20, I was like, there's no detail here. So it doesn't meet the standards. So we'll leave it. But I did, I mean, I did hold on to those just in case. Just in case I had a point where I was like, I need an episode to go out. But yeah, I've always stepped up the outreach, made sure I've had people lined up.
So I guess we talked a lot about podcasting today, but actually there is the podcast and that's why we're here today. But actually Customers Who Click is the CRO agency that continues to do some fantastic things for brands across the world. And so I guess I wanted to kind of get towards wrapping up today's conversation by saying, on all the episodes I've ever seen, you always ask someone the same question, which is around, what do we think brands should be doing to get customers clicking? And so I want to ask that to you. What do you think we should be doing to get customers to click, particularly brand side?
Yeah, well, I suppose the simple answer is CRO. Ideally with us, but you know, just get someone who knows CRO doing CRO. And to be more specific, it comes down to understanding your customers. Right. I did a post on LinkedIn the other day, which was six characteristics of a successful business, and all 6 points focused on the customer. Right. It's, can customers find what they want? Can they buy what they want? Are their questions answered? Are they any concerns about the business dealt with? And then there's two more. Well, did you get them excited?
Check out the,
whatever the sixth one was. All of them said, have you dealt with what the customer needs for this? And it's so important because it feeds into everything you do as well. CRO is not just about A/B testing and making a few tweaks on a website. All the research and insights you learn from it can go into your ads, your emails, your product, your customer service. You know, it's about optimizing the entire business. And I think if you take a really customer-centric approach to things, like I mentioned with Games Workshop, right? They might be wrong on this, but it's going to be close to zero advertising spend for Games Workshop. Right. They might have done some magazines and stuff in the early days in like hobby magazines, but as far as I'm aware, they've never done any paid advertising, put like performance ads or anything like that. Right. And they've grown, I'm not sure how much revenue they're doing now, 400 or 500 million, something like that. They're doing pretty well and they've just focused on what the customer wants and what they need. So yeah, that'd be my one thing.
Such a refreshing approach. Yeah. I think more businesses could learn from that. And I guess, well, I mean, if people have tuned in and maybe you've watched one or two of Will's episodes, maybe it's 200 and you're an avid fan. I guess the thing is, for those that want to find out more about you, well, I hope that they found out more about the person behind the podcast today and actually learning more about you as well. And I've certainly really enjoyed chatting with you and finding out more. So thank you. For those that want to find out more about Customers Who Click as a podcast or as a service and CRO, etc., where can they go to learn a little bit more?
Yes, if you head to customerswhoclick.com, there's loads of information on our CRO process, exactly how we do it and how we work with brands, a bunch of case studies as well. The podcast is on there. Or find me on LinkedIn, Will Lawrenson, with a little hand next pointing at my name to make me stand out a little bit. I share CRO and e-commerce content on there pretty much every day. So yeah, reach out on there, read my content, message me, always happy to chat.
I'd say that's certainly one thing, was a relentless pursuit of good quality content, whether it's in the podcast or LinkedIn, certainly shines through. So massive thank you for sharing the warts and all story of Customers Who Click today. I've absolutely loved it. I hope everyone listening has known it. And finally, thank you. Thank you for asking me to be the guest host. Incredibly humbling when you asked, and I've really enjoyed myself. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for coming and hosting. And yeah, I mean, likewise, if people want to hear about Quickfire Digital and Shopify Plus, I mean, you guys have done such an incredible amount for the community, the e-commerce community, like your events, your networking, all the white papers and ebooks and everything you guys put out. So yeah, where do people find out more about you?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is somewhere I think most people would start, which is Nathan Lomax or Quickfire Digital. You can go to the website, quickfiredigital.com. But yeah, primarily on LinkedIn, we're talking most days around e-commerce, around retail, around Plus, and just around community. And I think for those listening today, part of your community, it's a really special thing, right? And people love being part of communities. And I think what we're all trying to do is just bring as much value to the table as possible without expecting anything back. And I think when you do that, the magic starts to flow. So yeah, I'd love to connect with you all. Thank you for listening, and please do tune in. I look forward to episode 300 with the guys at Games Workshop. Very exciting.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? All right. Thank you so much, Nathan.
It's a pleasure. Take care.
Thanks for listening. That's all we have time for today. If you have any questions or would like to add to today's conversation, join me here on the podcast, sponsor the show, or work with me. Simply email will@customerswhoclick.com. Visit our website, customerswhoclick.com, or connect with me, Will Lawrenson, on LinkedIn. But until next time, keep those customers clicking.